From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California is knee-deep in election season, with early voting underway and primary day in less than 4 weeks on June 2nd. Plenty of races have drawn a lot of attention, notably the crowded field of candidates vying to become the Golden State's next governor. But there are plenty of other statewide offices on the ballot, not to mention congressional seats and local races. We're going to hone in on one of the wonkier positions, California Treasurer, a race that might not be at the top of voters' minds, but has some competitive names trying to secure the office. Ben Christopher is the housing reporter for the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters, which partners with public media stations across the state. And he's been tracking this race and joins us now. Welcome.
Hello.
So as a housing reporter, what interested you about this race?
Well, so narrowly, there are a lot of different functions of the state treasurer, but one of them is that they oversee the dispensing of tax credits and bonds that are used to subsidize affordable housing construction. So that was sort of narrowly what led me to this. But it's also what interests me is that this is, as you say, a pretty wonky position. The state treasurer is sort of the long-term asset and liability manager, the money manager for the state. They take the state governments, and many local governments have cash on hand that they aren't spending in any given moment. The treasurer's office invests it. The state also borrows money through bonds, and the treasurer's office is the one that sells those bonds and kind of manages that debt. They also, the treasurer sits on a whole number of boards, but including the two that oversee the state's two major public employee pension funds. So it is this remarkably important set of jobs, but pretty opaque to the average voter. And so I think just as a matter of California's longstanding commitment to direct democracy, it's just kind of an interesting example where voters are being asked to pick someone to serve this very important but kind of obscure role.
How does the state treasurer differ from the state controller?
So the state controller is really like an oversight watchdog kind of function. And also, like, technically, the controller's office is where checks go out. That's the person who actually signs the checks. If you work for state government, it'll have the controller's name on it. Whereas the treasurer is much more of like an asset and liability manager, sort of the money manager. But there is, again, I mean, it's a perfect question. I think even a lot of political reporters might wonder sort of what the actual difference is, and they have to kind of bone up on this every 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about state funding, you know, I think about like the governor's like budget proposal. I think of the legislature and how they either, you know, deal with a surplus or a shortfall. You have the Department of Finance, you have the Legislative Analyst's Office. How much power does the state treasurer have?
Yeah, I mean, that's another really important distinction to make, is that there is the Department of Finance, which sits within the governor's office. And so the governor is the one who actually oversees this sort of the yearly or bi-yearly budgetary process, whereas the treasurer, it's much more sort of a long-term financial role. In terms of their actual authority, that's a really good question. I mean, I think because these roles are relatively technical, they're kind of constrained by either the state constitution or by statute. There is kind of a limited set of levers that they can pull or things that they can do. That said, past treasurers have used the role to sort of expand the number of duties that they have by sort of introducing new programs or investing in things that the state hasn't traditionally invested in, or just using it as kind of another bully pulpit in which to either, you know, criticize the governor or sort of push for different policy changes. But, you know, I think it does open itself up to criticism as a position, which we've seen going back decades, even over a century, where people have looked at this as like kind of an empty role or just kind of a placeholder where retired politicians can kind of park themselves before looking for the next job.
Is this a race that usually gets a lot of attention to the everyday voter?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it sort of depends on who's running. But I would say, you know, this year there's a ton of focus, understandably, on the governor's race. Perhaps, I don't know for sure, but maybe many of the listeners to this program, this is the first time they've thought about the treasurer's race. I wouldn't say that's terribly unusual.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciated your piece because it was also kind of a history lesson, you know, going back to this position, like back to, you know, the turn of the century, you know, with Hiram Johnson. I mean, is there a consensus when you did this deep dive on what makes a good treasurer?
I wouldn't say that there's a consensus, but, you know, in speaking to some former treasurers and sort of looking at past, you know, op-ed pieces or editorial board recommendations, I think there's a number of different roles that the treasurer can play. So one of the things that was interesting to me is, like, looking back at a time long, long ago when California used to elect Republicans statewide, there were a number of circumstances in which you had, you know, whether it was Kathleen Brown, Bill Lockyer, Phil Angelides, these are Democrats who assumed the role of treasurer at a time when there were Republicans in the governor's office. And so at that time, I think the proper role, or the role that a lot of voters were turning to the treasurer for, was as a critic, sort of an institutional critic on financial matters of the governor. In more recent years, where it's been sort of Democrats being elected across the board in California, I think it's been a somewhat more quiet position. Certainly you want someone, I think voters would generally want someone who is responsible and also imposes some political accountability on a fairly bureaucratic and quiet kind of, but very important financial function within the state. And so I think it kind of depends on what kind of treasurer people are looking for. And of course, you know, this year there are a number of people running. You have two Republicans in particular who are running in that former sort of opposition role to the governor, kind of assuming that the next governor is a Democrat, which may or may not be the case. Whereas you have a lot of the Democrats running more on questions of, you know, either being financial, you know, responsible financial stewards, or people who have good bureaucratic management experience, you know, can oversee a bureaucracy of the state, that kind of thing.
Hmm. Have Californians always voted for treasurer? Has this always been an elected office role?
It has, since the very beginning. Yeah, this is part of the Constitution. So yeah, if you ask, and a lot of people might, like, why do we do this? Why do we elect the treasurer? It's because it's in the Constitution, and we've been doing it ever since. But yeah, to your point, and, you know, there have been many people who have raised questions about whether we ought to. You mentioned Hiram Johnson, which is just, I found this speech. People don't know he was a former governor, the first couple decades of the 20th century, and kind of a founding father in some ways of modern California politics. You know, we have the referendum, the initiative, the recall on the ballot. He's the guy who came up with that. So he's a very big proponent of direct democracy. But even he was kind of skeptical about, like, wait, why do we elect the treasurer? He gave a speech to the legislature in 1911, and he called it a merely clerical position. And he said the qualifications naturally cannot be well understood just because they're so technical and opaque. And so even he was kind of wondering, like, why do we elect these people? But, you know, the short answer is we always have.
Yep. And we are going to do so again for this election. So let's get into the candidates. Probably biggest name on the ticket is the lieutenant governor, Eleni Kounoulakis. Previously threw her hat in for the governor's race, now running for state treasurer. Why does she say she's the best candidate for this position?
Well, she has, prior to becoming lieutenant governor, she has played a major role as a developer. And so she has a lot of sort of technical and financial experience in her, as she says. She also has experience running a statewide office, albeit a small one, the lieutenant governor. And she also has a lot of connections. So she... as a developer and sort of the daughter of a well-known developer in the Sacramento area, she came into politics as a fundraiser. And so this explains perhaps why she was endorsed by Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi and the governor, Gavin Newsom. And so, you know, she's talked about sort of turning to her Rolodex, if something needs to get unstuck, or she needs to make a deal, or she needs to... reach out to someone in the state to get some financial arrangement working. She has those connections that she can draw upon. And yes, she did initially run for governor. She decided to end her campaign last year. But she has since claimed that, you know, in fact, she thinks that Treasure is a better fit anyway, because she kind of craves a more technical role, as she puts it.
All right. I mean, those are some big endorsements from the governor to former Speaker Nancy Pelosi. I mean, what does her, I guess, campaign war chest look like? I mean, does she have a lot of funding?
She does. She does. She has, in fact, if you just look at cash on hand, she has almost nine times as much as all the other candidates combined. A lot, the bulk of that comes from her prior campaigns for when she was running for lieutenant governor. She's since transferred them in. And so if you look at current fundraising efforts, it's a little bit more balanced. In fact, her lead competitor in the race, Ana Caballero, who's a state senator, has actually raised more in individual contributions since the beginning of this year. But yeah, if you just look at the amount of the size of the war chest, Kunalakis's funds are pretty unrivaled.
All right. Well, let's dive into State Senator Ana Caballero. What are her credentials?
Yeah. So she's a longtime politician. She's originally from Salinas, was the mayor of that town, served as an assembly member, is now a state senator. Part of redistricting, it pushed her out to the east. So now she represents Merced. And then in the middle of that, she actually was appointed to be a cabinet secretary under Jerry Brown, the head of the Business Consumer Services and Housing Agency, which is actually oversees HCD, the Housing and Community Development Agency or Department, which is central to my coverage as a housing reporter. And so she points to that experience both as just sort of the managerial experience of running a state bureaucracy is really important, and also you know, given the focus on housing, which is a big part of the treasurer's role, she points to that as sort of an important experience. I should also say, as a legislator, and particularly in the last, as a senator, she has passed a number of bills really focused on trying to make it easier to build certain types of housing in the state. And so this is an area of a focus for her. I should say also that Eleni Kunalakis is also very focused on housing, and both talk about the need to really make it easier to build in general, and also to simplify the affordable housing application process to make it easier to get money out the door to affordable developers.
All right. Who are the Republican candidates?
Yeah, on the Republican side, there are two candidates, which I think it's fair to say neither of whom are particularly well known. Jennifer Hawks is a Bay Area Republican Party activist. She's also a former private school administrator, and I think prior to that served as is sort of a financial role in various businesses in the Bay Area. And then there's David Serpa, who is a veteran, describes himself as an entrepreneur. He's written a book. He also ran for Congress in the past. And at least in that race, the California GOP has endorsed Hawks. And so there's a real effort politically on the Republican side to sort of rally around one candidate with the hopes of getting Hawks on the into the top two to qualify for the November ballot.
And in your reporting, I mean, you round out six candidates. So who are the other two?
The other two. So there's Tony Vasquez is a third Democrat who's running. He's on the Board of Equalization, which in terms of obscure electoral positions in California, that might even outrank treasurer. That's the elected tax board in California. He represents Southern California on the board, a bunch of Southern California, the LA area. And then there's also a Green Party candidate named Glenn Turner.
So who are the main challengers to the two Democrats that you led at the top with Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kunalakis and State Senator Caballero? Are the Republicans or the other two candidates really viable challengers in this race?
Well, I think so, if only because they have an R next to their name. And so, you know, as is often the case in California politics, you have a very fierce and well-financed conflict or contest, rather, between the top Democrats in the race. But because even in California, which we all think of as thoroughly Democratic, you know, you're going to see a third, 40% of the electorate is going to swing to the Republicans. And so if all the Republican voters get behind one candidate, you could very easily see them make it onto the November ballot, because again, we have a top two system where only the top two candidates, regardless of party, make it to November. And so right now, Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis and Senator Caballero are really vying to try and get into that top two, whereas one of the Republicans, presumably Jennifer Hawks, because she has the endorsements, could also make it into that top two, in which case the November race would likely be very uncompetitive if it's one Democrat versus one Republican, because the Democrat would almost certainly win. And so it does make the current race through June one in which the two Democrats at the top are really fiercely competing with one another to try and get one of those two spots.
All right. So on the Democrat side, like, this is a competitive race between the lieutenant governor and the state senator. I mean, where do they kind of stack up on policies? Is there any daylight between them?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, the short answer is not a ton. I would say on the main issues, they're kind of aligned. They both, as I said, they want to simplify the application process for affordable housing subsidies, which I should say has been actually ongoing anyway. The state, the governor, Governor Newsom, is in the process of standing up a new housing agency that's supposed to be doing a lot of that work anyway. Both support a lot of the more recent initiatives that past treasurers have created or helped support. So there's a directing state funds towards renewable energy bonds, for example. Both support that. There's a statewide retirement savings program for employees who don't get a pension or 401k at work. They both support that. They both support, to a limited extent, sort of directing banking funds towards lower income neighborhoods or communities across the state. And so I would say, is there daylight? Not a ton. I mean, they both kind of emphasize different things. One of the things that came up a couple times when I was speaking to Senator Caballero is that she really is enthusiastic about hydrogen as a gasoline alternative, and said that as treasurer, she would try to push through like private-public partnerships to sort of bolster that industry. Haven't heard that from Eleni Kunalakis, who's a real avid advocate for wind, particularly offshore wind. So again, those are not like huge chasms when it comes to ideological chasms between the two. But if you're really squinting, you can find some areas where maybe they differ slightly. But I would say on the whole, they both have very similar policy and ideological views.
Well, Ben, thanks so much for taking that deep dive and helping us better understand this position.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ben Christopher is a reporter with CalMatters, and we've been talking about the race for California treasurer. Up next, if we get lost in our anxious thoughts, there just are a lot of scenarios that could end human existence as we know it. Well, a new podcast is diving into the apocalyptic ether. The creator of the series, Are We Doomed?, joins us. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.